you've ever opened a car manual, you'll have seen an exploded view. It's a schematic drawing where each element of a part is separated by white space, almost like the piece has exploded from inside. Exploded View is also the name of a new book by the Australian author and journalist Carrie Tiffany, a book that explores the spaces between a troubled family in 1970s Australia. Our hero is a teenage girl. She's never named and she refuses to speak. And she finds comfort in the pages of a Holden car manual, a booklet illustrated with pages of exploded views. Carrie Tiffany, welcome to the book show.
Thanks, Claire.
I actually believe you have your own Holden manual that's been an important part of your life. Can you tell me about this manual?
Well, I do like manuals and I have a number of manuals, and I'm one of those nerdy people that does always actually kind of save the manual to all of the machines that I own, and I've sort of put them in a special folder. But I have had it's actually a Tirana manual for about 30 years that I've been carrying around. And I do look at it, and I have looked at it, and it became very important to the writing of the book that I could see that there was something about the way I might be able to use this manual to say something about a family and about its component parts and about how it can come together perhaps to make something, you know, better, but also about, you know, the damage that the different parts can do to each other when it's not working. And so it became a sort of metaphorical device in some ways, but also it became really a place where I found a lot of the language for the book. And I'm very interested as a writer in this kind of idea of collage, really, that there is already a lot of text out there. And rather than being sort of particularly creative or imaginative, but what I could do is kind of cut it up and fiddle with it and rearrange it and see what it might mean, you know, if I used it in a different way.
So you're kind of approaching writing like a mechanic. You are a car lover, right?
I do really love to drive, and I quite like long haul driving, and I've done a lot of long haul driving. When I worked in the Northern Territory when I was younger, it wasn't uncommon for us to drive 4 hours to a meeting and then 4 hours back again in the same day, and a lot of four wheel driving. And you know, I have been involved in tinkering with cars, and you know, I did a diesel mechanics course when I worked in the Northern Territory. I'm very frustrated that my car at the moment is just this kind of, you know, pretty crappy, ordinary Ford. Am I allowed to say that? Yeah. On the radio. And it's all sealed, of course. The engine's all sealed, so I can't even get into it and do anything with it. But those kind of practical skills of building something, making something, fixing something have always been really central to me, yeah.
Your new book is Exploded View, and our unnamed narrator is also good with cars, a bit like you, Carrie. She's learned from her stepfather, who's a mechanic. She struck me as quite a strange girl. She doesn't talk. She doesn't go to school. She breaks into other people's houses. Is that word I'm using, strange, is that a fair word to use?
Gosh, you know, I don't really, as a writer, it's not really for me to make those kind of pronouncements, I think, about the book in terms of about character. What I'm trying to do in the book is provide some kind of access to someone's internal world and to how they might think. So, you know, and I you know, there's very hardly any dialogue in the book, and this narrator is quite friendless and is very isolated. So there is a, you know, probably quite a claustrophobic sense of this interior life of this girl. Whether or not she's strange, I don't think that really occurs to me or even sort of matters to me. I think the test for me more is kind of whether she's true and whether there's a sort of sincerity in her expression and whether it's affecting for people.
Mm. I certainly found that she was unusual, and that just grabbed me from the start because, you know, for example, she's breaking into somebody's house on about page 3, and that seems like not really the right thing to do, but there's this kindness to her. She breaks into her next door neighbour's house and she fixes the toaster. She's secretly replacing her mum's bottles of perfume. She's a kind, sweet girl as well.
That's interesting, and I think I'm glad you think that, because if I have had some comments about the criminality in the book. I think that for children, and certainly this was the case with me, that, you know, the law and the idea that there are sort of rules around, people's houses or, you know, sort of shoplifting, things like this, it's really... it's very fluid, isn't it? You can't see it. You can't touch this thing called the law. And why wouldn't you, as a child, kind of push against it and kind of not really believe it? And that was certainly the case with me. It didn't seem that there was going to be any particularly negative consequences for the things that I did when I was a child. And some of those things are in the book. And, you know, some of these acts of criminality, I think, also in young people may be... a desire for a kind of expression. And I think particularly I'm trying to say something in the book about what it's like to be a girl, or what it was like to be a girl. I was a girl in the late 1970s, where you have this kind of sense that your life is kind of made up in some ways of these kind of leftover bits of other people's lives, and that you're sort of trying to carve something out that's you, but it's not really something that is very desiring or proactive. It's kind of reactive, really, and it's sort of made up of scraps of things. And it's about putting yourself in spaces where you don't offend and you're not really noticed and you do the right thing. And that was very interesting to me. So one of the, I think, the reasons that the narrator does go into other people's houses is she is really interested in this question of how do people live, and what is behind the facades of these houses, and what might these houses contain? Do they contain the feelings of people, or do they just contain the things of people? How does all of that work? So a lot of it is really a very kind of elemental curiosity. And I think this is one of the things that all children have. And it's one of the reasons I think writers are very interested, and artists, in trying to return to that kind of childish sense of the world, where things are sort of coming at you in a sort of sense of flow, really, in a kind of autistic way, where you don't see the meaning or the frame. You just have everything coming at you at one point and you're trying to make sense of it.
This curiosity and criminality applies to cars for our hero as well. Her stepfather is a mechanic, and she goes and works on these cars sometimes, but she's also sometimes sabotaging the cars, taking parts, burying parts. She loves cars. What is the appeal of working on a car for this girl?
Well, I think, you know, cars are very, and still today, very caught up with masculinity and caught up with freedom and caught up with power. There's something quintessentially Australian about road trips and about being on the road. You know, this sense that we've kind of conquered the landscape by concreting it. So those sorts of things are something that she's witnessing and sort of trying to work out if she could also have some of that for herself.
She has a very complicated relationship with this man called Father Man, who we learn is her stepfather. What can you tell me about the relationship between these two?
Well, I think the relationship with Father Man is, yeah, very, very central to the book, even though it's a relationship that is really silent. You know, there's not much exchange that happens between them, but in some ways there is a power struggle. And I think that the narrator is trying to find ways of affecting Father Man that are subtle, but they're also, you know, sort of trying to get at him, you know, at where she believes his heart lives, which is very much in the engine of a car. You know, she sees that this is where his interest is, and she causes him great frustration by getting up at night and climbing out of her room, out of the window, and going up and sabotaging cars that he has been evidently fixing during the day, and burying the parts, or sometimes even sort of conducting a demonstration. So at one point she takes some feathers out of her pillow and she puts them on the rocker cover of a car. And to her, in her mind, what she's doing is she's saying, well, here is their engine and it's hard. It's a hard thing. It's a masculine thing. But here, look, here's something soft. Here's this feather on top of it. Could it also mean something soft? So whether or not he understands these demonstrations, we think possibly not. You know, there's a tremendous miscommunication, there's a lack of respect, there's, you know, it's a degrading relationship for the girl. But still she pushes back in different ways, either through this kind of these acts of sabotage or through these kind of demonstrations. At one point she also put some of her mother's sewing needles in the damper cap of a car. So she's trying to communicate with what she has, and what she has is not much, really. She's quite elided and silenced and sort of pushed aside.
He's a cruel man, and he has these eruptions of anger. At one point, he gets frustrated with the fact that she's not talking at the dinner table. He picks up a pair of scissors and chops off her ponytail. And her description of that moment is very detached. In fact, throughout the book, she seems quite detached, like she's almost observing it from somewhere else. Is this a coping mechanism for this girl?
I think, Claire, it's about disassociation. And I think I was really interested in that. I was interested in how, in some ways, you know, the cars and the car parts were sort of vehicles for this disassociation. And I think this is very common for children, for anyone really who's experiencing, you know, fairly intense trauma, that the way that, you know, you go on and that life becomes bearable is that you have to separate yourself from it in some ways. So you become kind of your own narrator rather than your own person, which, I, you know, is clearly not good for you, not good for you spiritually or psychically into the future. But it's certainly, I think, something that is true and that I wanted to write about. So it's not that I'm sort of avoiding on purpose saying I felt this or I felt that, but more that I felt that these dissociative acts, the things that she does, speak more really about her pain than emotive language would.
Is this dissociation something that you identify with yourself, Carrie?
Yes, of course. And I think that's something that everybody is familiar with, that in times when we are threatened and we're in conflict, that, and I suspect it is a kind of protective mechanism, that you kind of have to leave yourself in some ways and have to kind of put yourself somewhere else. And you know, and for a lot of people also, there's kind of no way back. And perhaps that's kind of what art does in some ways, is it sort of tries to provide a way back.
You've said that this is the most autobiographical book you've written, and you've already identified some of the characteristics you share with this girl. What is it like, Carrie, to revisit hard memories of childhood in writing? Is it a healing thing to do? Is it a painful thing to do?
I think all fiction really is autobiographical, and you know, all autobiography is also fiction. You know, these things are always flowing from one to the other, and I think my other books as well have been. Well, to me, I can see that they're highly autobiographical. That the characters in them, the way they feel things, the way they express themselves, their central ways of being in the world, of course, are from me. You know, I only have my own experience that I can sort of push into character or I can use. I think maybe you're trying to ask me if it's therapeutic to write about this. And I wish I could just sort of simply say yes, but I think it's a lot more complicated than that. I think that returning to kind of those places in your mind where things are stored sharply and cause you distress when you go there, being able to return to them and make something of them, of course, is a good thing. And, you know, it sort of possibly means that they're sort of less repressed, and hopefully maybe you sort of act out on them less. But it doesn't take them away. And I still, you know, I feel when I think about the book and the writing of the book, it still makes me quake a little. And more than anything, I feel that it was a sort of a discharging of fear in some ways. But Yes, it doesn't completely take the fear away.
Yeah, I certainly believe that. We spend this whole book in the mind of this teenage girl. This is a girl who doesn't talk, so we are very much in her head for the whole book. How hard is this technically, Carrie?
Well, actually, that's not for me. That wasn't so much the technical challenge for me, because I know that, you know, in writing class they'll tell you that dialogue reveals character, dialogue reveals character. And dialogue is a way kind of when a novel feels like it sort of enters the real, because it's like you're eavesdropping on something that's actually happening, a conversation that's happening. But there are other ways of kind of being in the real, and this intense sort of first-person interiority is also was also for me kind of challenging and was a good place for me to be. And particularly, I think if there'd been a lot more dialogue in the book, it would have been dialogue that had so much subtext that perhaps it would have just been completely gnomic, you know, and meaningless. Because, you know, the thing about this girl is, because of her experiences in this family, she cannot speak. She can only speak to herself. You know, she's not lost inside herself. You're only lost to others, she says at one point. And that's what I really wanted to do. I wanted to give her an opportunity to speak at least inside herself, in her mind, in a way that we then, you know, could enter and understand.
Well, Carrie, this is one of the most gripping novels I've read in a really long time. Thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you, Claire. Thanks.
Carrie Tiffany is the author of three novels, including the Stella Prize-winning Mateship with Birds. Her latest book is Exploded View, and that's published by Text. And speaking of the Stella, here at The Book Show, we're working on a special series just for podcast listeners. The producer, Sarah Lestrange, and I are currently in the process of interviewing all of the shortlisted writers for this year's prize, and those interviews will be coming out later this week. So to listen, make sure you have subscribed to The Book Show podcast. While you're there, make sure you check out our sister show, The Bookshelf. Kate and Cassie actually reviewed Exploded View a couple of weeks ago, and that's well worth a listen. This is The Book Show. I'm Claire Nichols.